I was so excited last week when I stood up and the room was almost full. And after class was over, I realized that Mark wasn't here, and so all of his folks was in here too. Mark's back this morning, so if you've been going to his class and you want to do that, that will be just fine. But always enjoy seeing a full room. Somebody asked me one time, Ken, why is it that you go to Sunday school? I said, with all of your Bible knowledge and all the studying you've done over the years, you can't learn much. Why do you go to Sunday school? And this rather surprised me to some extent because the guy that was asking me this question was a retired preacher. But then again, he only came on Sunday morning for 1 hour, and the rest of the week he thought he was fine. But my answer to that question was, well, number one, I go to Sunday school because I might realize something I never realized before. You know, we do that. It was many, many years of hearing the little story of Little Red Riding Hood before I realized the message in that story was not just a story for children, but the message was, don't talk to strangers. You might realize something that you just, for years, completely overlooked. I said the second reason is that it helps me to remember things I've already learned. You know, we have to keep them in our remembrance or we'll forget them and then we fall back into our old traps and old paths. I said, and the third reason is because I believe that being present helps the teacher to do a better job. They just seem to do a better job when the auditorium or the room is full or fuller than if you've just got one or two people in the room. So those are the three reasons that I make it a point to attend every opportunity that I can. And I'm glad to see you here this morning. It's a great encouragement. We want to study this morning a question that is, I think, very, very important. It is one of the first institutions that God set in motion. And upon this one institution, I believe, is the foundation of not only the family and the home, but also the church and the nation, and that is dealing with marriage. Where did it go? Renewing your marriage when the knot begins to slip. What do we do, and how do we keep that knot, that union, from slipping? And sometimes, I'll be honest, as I was studying this, I thought, you know, there are a lot more of you folks in here maybe more qualified to teach this lesson than I am. You've had a lot more experience at it. But I hope that we will gain some things from it this morning that will help all of us. What do we do and how do we keep that knot from slipping? One, we need to realize that marriage and the wedding ceremony was intended by God to be a once-in-a-lifetime event. It wasn't something that was intended to be done over and over and over again. When I was living in Georgia several years ago, there was a lady that I worked with who asked me, why didn't I just get married? We got talking about marriage and relationships, and I indicated I was more of an old-fashioned guy and didn't think that we ought to be shacking up and just living around. She said, well, just find somebody to get married. If it don't work out, you can always get a divorce. He says, it only costs $200. And she ought to have known she was in her late 20s, early 30s, been married 7 times. I don't believe that God really had it intended. Originally, a marriage was designed by God to be a once-in-a-lifetime event. It was one of those things that and it's one of those events where you see the lady, the bride, usually dressed in the finest dress that she'll probably ever wear. Most expensive, most elaborate, most beautiful. And it may be one of the very few times that a groom will wear a tux. We just put a lot of emphasis on wedding ceremonies. In Matthew 19, verses 3 through 6, the Pharisees came to Jesus, tempting him. You have to understand, the Pharisees were among one of the groups of people who was always trying to trap Jesus, always trying to trick him, always trying to get him into trouble. And they said to him, "Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? Can I just divorce her because I want to?" And Jesus answered and said to them, "Have you not read that he which made them in the beginning made them male and female? And said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. Wherefore they are no more twain, they are no more two, but they are one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder." Jesus said in the beginning, God designed the marriage to be between one man and one woman, and it was not to be separated, not to be put asunder. But he gives us three keys in this one passage to making your marriage work. And the first key is leaving. He said, "For this cause shall a man leave father and mother." And so we need to understand that one of the keys is leaving. Our childhood home is our training ground for relationship building. That's where I learn how I ought to treat people. That's where I learn how I ought to treat my spouse. That's where I learn how I ought to treat my children. That's where I learn how to treat my parents. So as parents, you have an awesome responsibility to teach your children these things. You see, as children, we learn by observation. More so than by what you tell me, I learn by what I see. You can tell me I ought to go to church. You can force me to go to church. But if when we are as a family away from church, you don't act the way that I learned how you ought to act in church, guess what I'm learning? Church, religion, God is not really all that important. It's just something you go and you do, and then you go live the way you want to. Our children learn that from us. Our children learn how they ought to treat their spouse by watching the way mama treats daddy and the way daddy treats mama. And our children learn how they ought to treat their parents by watching how parents treat their parents. How you treat my grandparents teaches me how I ought to treat you. So the home is a training ground for relationship building and how we should treat one another. Mothers and fathers should be honored for a lifetime. Understand, mothers and fathers should be honored for a lifetime. I honor my parents through many ways. One, by living up to the expectations that they set for me, living up to the standards that they taught me to live. I honor them by asking their advice. I honor them by calling, by going to visit, by sending cards, by recognizing special days such as birthdays or holidays or anniversaries. I honor them through a whole number of things. But when you become married, your loyalty belongs to your spouse. Understand that when you become married, your loyalty, while you honor your parents, your loyalty is to your spouse. When it comes to the question of, do I do what my parents want me to do, or do I do what my spouse wants me to do, what my spouse needs for me to do, where do my loyalties lie? They lie with my spouse. You have to leave your father and your mother so that you can bond in the way that God planned for you to bond. Parents who love their children will make sure that the apron strings are cut and not just loosely untied. That's not to say that you abandon them and you leave them alone and you say, okay, you're on your own now. I'm done with you. Don't call me. Don't ask me for advice. Don't seek out my opinion. But the apron strings have to be cut. Children have to understand, kind of like the old man who was sitting at table that night at supper, and his son sitting on the other end of the table announced that he was getting married the next day. And after supper, Dad got up and he just went over and he took the son's dinner plate, and they only had one plate apiece. You know how that can be when years ago, now we've got china stacked up in the cabinets. But in those days, that family only had one plate for each person, so they washed the plate and reused it. And after the meal was over with, Dad got up and he walked around there and he picked up the son's plate and he just broke it right on the table. Son kind of looked at me and says, well, son, you're getting married. You're not going to live here anymore. You're going to be on your own. The apron strings are cut. They're broken. They're gone. Couples have to assume responsibility for moving toward oneness. Newlyweds must look to one another to supply their needs to grow and marital intimacy and respect. So one of the keys to renewing your marriage, to keeping your marriage strong and where it is, where it ought to be, is that you've got to leave others. Jesus said, leave. And then he said, you must cleave. Leave father and mother and cleave unto his wife. When that word cleave is used, it means to be glued, to be joined, to stick together, to be welded together. As you experience the adventure of life, and it is one of those strange things that when you stick together through the little things, you will grow to where you stick together through the hard things. You will become welded. And as I understand it, when you take two pieces of metal and you weld them together and you weld them properly, that metal may break, but the weld will hold. It may break. The right side or the left side of that piece of metal may break. The husband may break, the wife may break, but the weld, the union, the cleaving together will stay. The home is under attack today. It has always been under attack, and the devil has put the home under attack for one reason, and that is because he understands that upon the foundation of the home is built everything else. The church, society, morality, the nation is all built upon the foundation of the home. The home was the first thing that God made after creation. Everything else is built upon it. In Mark 3, verses 24 through 25, Jesus said, and if a kingdom be divided against itself, that kingdom cannot stand. And if a house is divided against itself, that house cannot stand. When problems arise, blaming each other is not the answer. And problems are going to arise. Problems are going to come. A good marriage is made up of imperfect people who realize they will get out of it what they put into it. And cleaving is the only way to beat the odds and to build a life together. So there is leaving and there is cleaving. There is, regardless of what happens, we're going to stay together. My friend over in Georgia says, you know, it only costs $200 to get a divorce. Well, It may cost more than that now. That was back in the 1980s. Lawyers are more expensive. Judges are more expensive. Court costs are more expensive. It may cost you more than that. Our problem, though, that she pointed out when she said that was very simple. In the beginning, God intended for man and woman to be together for their lifetime. And in our society today, divorce has become the first answer to every question and every problem. We'll just get a divorce. Every fight and every argument, let's just get a divorce and get it over with. When divorce ought to be, number one, the last answer. And number two, it is authorized by God for only one reason. Irreconcilable differences is not a reason for a divorce. Just because my spouse is now sick and needs more care than she did when we were young and healthy is not a reason for a divorce. Yeah, those are not reasons for divorce, though. The only reason for divorce is what? Fornication, adultery, infidelity. And so we need to understand that if our marriage is to survive, we've got to leave others. We've got to cleave to one another. And we will become one. There is blending, becoming one, completing each other, making the other complete. I'm not complete by myself. I might get along just fine. I can cook and I can clean house and I know how to wash clothes and wash dishes and do those things. But God said it's not good for man to be alone. I might can get along fine by myself, but I am much better when I find someone that makes me complete. And when you find that someone that makes you complete, you need to blend together with them. Matthew 19 and verse 6 says, it's a warning for any who would cause a separation. We can blame it on judges. We can blame it on lawyers. We can blame it on each other. We can blame it on a third party. Anyone who causes. Now, lawyers, they like for divorce to happen because they get money out of it. They get paid for it. That's their job. I'm not saying all lawyers are bad. And I'm not saying sometimes it's not necessary. But if you're getting divorced because of money problems, keep in mind that the only one that's really going to come out ahead is going to be the lawyer. You're still going to be stuck with the bills. It's just now you've got one more to go with it. It could be that the husband is not doing his responsibilities. He's not taking care of his wife, and she decides, I've had enough of this. He might be physically or verbally abusive. He just might not care. He might spend all of his money on things other than taking care of the family. You know, when we become one, when we become married, when we become a family, some things have to go away. We have to grow out of all of our toys, per se. Not to say that we can't have toys, but toys come after family. I want a new boat, that's fine. It comes after I've taken care of all my household problems. After the groceries are bought, after the mortgage is paid, after the insurance is done, and after all the other things that the family needs, anything I've got left over, I can use towards my toys, whatever my toys may be. Boats, golf clubs, new cars, lawnmowers. It may be that the wife has a problem, and you know, wives, if you've got a problem that's causing an issue in your marriage, don't let that lead to your husband leaving you. Work on whatever that problem is. Don't let you be the cause for divorce. It could be a third party, and sometimes a third party is more of a problem than what we realize when husband and wife are both working outside the home. We get associating with other people in the workplace. We start developing relationships with them. Next thing, if you're not careful, that can lead to an affair. That third party may be the cause of us not blending. We need to realize that marriage is a living, growing thing that has to be nurtured. When we plant a garden, we understand we've got to nurture that garden. It's got to be hoed, it's got to be fertilized, it's got to be plowed, it's got to be watered, it's got to have this done to it and that done to it so that it will grow. A marriage is one of those things, like a garden, that it has to be nurtured. There's nothing wrong with a husband thanking his wife for cooking a meal every time she cooks a meal. Honey, that was a wonderful meal. Thank you for cooking that meal. Did she have to cook that meal? Well, maybe, maybe not. That meal could have been a bologna sandwich. Here's the bread, here's the bologna. Fix it yourself. Husband takes out the garbage or mows the grass or whatever, you know, and it can be simple things. How many of you like to play cards? You ever play with your spouse? You sit down at the table and you're playing cards? Sitting there playing cards and you say, honey, I'm thirsty and I'm going to go get a bottle of water out of the fridge. Would you like something to drink? And she'll either say yes or no, and if she does, and you bring it to her. Now tell me, which one of these is going to develop a better relationship for you? Honey, I'm thirsty, and I'm going to go get some drink. Would you like something? Or honey, I'm just going to go get a bottle of water out of the fridge. Would you like something to drink? Or for him to sit there and say, honey, I'm thirsty, go get me a bottle of water. Did you get my point? Honey, I'm going to go get, would you like something? Or, I'm thirsty, go get me. The wife might sit there and say, well, what's wrong with your two legs? Blending comes about, among other things, by nurturing. Treating your mate with courtesy, caring deeply, having open communication. Honey, we need to talk about this. Or honey, I've got a decision to make concerning work. We need to discuss this and see what's the best route we want to take. Keeping the courtship alive, never taking each other for granted. And it's a conscious effort. So there is leaving, there's cleaving, there's blending. Now, you're not always going to love your spouse in the same way. That feeling is not always going to be there. Somebody says, yes, I love them, but I don't like them very much right now. Have you ever heard that? I love you, but I don't like you very much right now. Well, keep in mind that love is not just a feeling. Love is commanded. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 25 says, "Husbands, love your wife, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it." Titus chapter 2 and verse 4 says that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children. So love is not only commanded, but it's something that we can learn. In Matthew 5 verses 43 through 48, Jesus says, "Have you not have been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy? But I say to you, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you. Pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. For he maketh the sun to rise on the evil and on the good. He sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. For if we love them which love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? And if you salute your brethren only, what do you more than others? Do not even the publicans so? Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect." And Matthew 7:12 says, "Therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets." In Romans 12, verses 19 through 21, it says, "Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place to wrath, for it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord.' Therefore, if my enemy hunger, feed him, and if he thirst, give him drink, and in so doing you shall heap coals of fire upon his head, and not overcome evil. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." Love is something that's commanded. It's something that I can learn to do. It's not just a feeling. It's something that I am dedicated to. Keep in mind that it is not a quick fix. This is a process that takes time. In Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 5, and by the way, all of these PowerPoints that you have seen during the course of this study are on the internet. So you can go there and download them. You can look at them. You can take notes from them. If you miss something in class and you want to keep it, you can go there and get it. It's on the audio sermons section of the internet. But I look here at Deuteronomy chapter 24. And it talks about when a man takes a wife and marries her, it shall come to pass that she find no favor in him. And it talks about divorce there. And down in the last part of that passage, it says, "When a man taketh a wife, he shall not go to war, neither shall he be charged with any business, but he shall be free at home 1 year and shall cheer up his wife which he hath taken." Interesting, is it not? When you marry someone under the Mosaic law, you could not be drafted nor could you go to war for at least 1 year. That would give you time for that marriage to blend together. And Malachi 2 and verse 16 says, "For the Lord, the God of Israel, saith that he hateth putting away. For one covereth violence with his garment, saith the Lord of hosts. Therefore take heed to your spirit that you deal not treacherously." God hates putting away. Luke 16:18, whosoever putteth away his wife and marrieth another committeth adultery. And whosoever marrieth her that is put away from her husband committeth adultery. It takes time. There are spiritual solutions. Yet you say in Malachi chapter 2, verse 14 through 16, yet you say, wherefore, because the Lord hath been witness between thee and the wife of thy youth, against whom thou hast dealt treacherously, yet is she thy companion and the wife of thy covenant. And did not he make one? Yet had he the residue of the Spirit, and wherefore one? That he might seek a godly seed. Therefore take heed to your spirit, and let none deal treacherously against the wife of his youth. For the Lord, the God of Israel, saith that he hateth putting away. For one covereth violence with his garment, saith the Lord of hosts. Therefore take heed to your spirit, that you deal not treacherously. In Deuteronomy 24 and verse 5 says, when a man hath taken a new wife, he shall not go out to war, neither shall he be charged with any business, but he shall be free at home 1 year and shall cheer up his wife which he's taken. In Ephesians 5:28 says, so ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. We are to love our spouse as though they were us. What happens when you do that is totally amazing. It reminds me of the story of a woman who went to see the preacher. And she said to the preacher, I am so mad at my husband, I'm going to leave him. And I want to know what is the meanest thing that I can do to him before I leave him. I'm going to leave him, and I want to know what's the meanest thing I can do for him before I leave him. And the preacher says, well, this is what you need to do for him. You need to do to him. For the next 30 days, you be the nicest, sweetest, best thing that ever happened to him. You fix all of his favorite meals. You have his slippers waiting by his favorite chair when he comes in from work so he can sit down and change. You, yes, honey, and okay, sweetie pie, and sugar baby, and whatever else it is. You just treat him like he is the king of the world. You anticipate his every need and you have it ready for him before he asks for it. You be at his beck and call and you do everything he wants and you don't argue with him at all. And at the end of 30 days, while he's off at work, you just leave. Don't pack any clothes. Don't take any jewelry. Don't take any of your cosmetics. Don't even take the car. Have somebody come get you. Just leave. Don't leave a note. Don't say a word. Just leave. She says, what will that do? The preacher says, that will drive him absolutely crazy. What's happened to my wife? Where did she go? Something's got to be wrong. She's never even indicated that there was a problem. Preacher said that will drive her up the wall. And she liked that idea. That she said, you're right. That's probably the meanest thing that I could ever do to him. And so for the next 30 days, she was the nicest, sweetest, greatest little old woman you ever saw. She was the best thing in the world to her husband. And at the end of 30 days, she was still there, and the preacher asked her, says, why haven't you left? She says, well, why in the world would I want to leave a man as great as him? See, she was being overly nice and overly kind to him with the intention all in the mind when she started of going to punish him. I'm going to be so sweet to him that he's really going to miss me when I'm gone. And he, in turn, found himself reciprocating. He was returning the favor, so to speak. When it comes to our marriage, we've got to realize that it is always, I don't care how long you have been married, whether you've been married for a couple of weeks, a year, or you're celebrating your 50-plus wedding anniversary, your wedding, your marriage is a living, growing, breathing thing. It has to be nurtured, and please feed it and treat it that way. Next week, we will be looking at renewing your happiness and the secret to being happy. Thank you so much this morning.